Welcome to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories, trends, and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. It is great to be here with you all. Today we are covering the top stories from yesterday, April 4th, 2026. This is episode number 356, and we have a really fascinating lineup for you today.
We really do. We are going to be talking about a massive corporate censorship scandal involving Meta and a former executive. We also have some juicy Y Combinator drama with a startup called Delve getting booted from the platform. On the technical side, we are looking at a new paper on how embarrassingly simple self-distillation is improving code generation in large language models. Plus, a really cool show HN, where you can literally build a GPU in your browser. And finally, we'll try to answer the impossible question, exactly how many products does Microsoft have named Copilot?
Spoiler alert on that last one, it is a lot. But let us kick things off with our top story. This one blew up on the site, pulling in over 750 points. The headline is, author of Careless People banned from saying anything negative about Meta.
This is a wild story, Mike. So Sarah Wynne Williams, who was the director of global public policy at Facebook from 2011 to 2017, wrote an exposé about her time there called Careless People. The book makes some incredibly heavy allegations. We're talking sexual harassment, deliberate manipulation of vulnerable teenagers, and claims that the company worked hand in glove with the Chinese Communist Party.
Right, and Meta did not just sit back and let this happen. But instead of suing for defamation, which would require them to prove the claims were false in an open court, they went a completely different route. They used an emergency non-court arbitrator to enforce a non-disparagement clause from her severance agreement. They essentially gagged her on the day her book was published in the UK. She is now facing a $50,000 fine for every single statement she makes that could be seen as negative toward Meta.
It is terrifying. The terms are so broad that they theoretically apply to conversations she has in the privacy of her own home with her family. Her publisher, Pan Macmillan, wrote this article because Sarah herself literally can't speak about her own book without facing financial ruin. But of course, we all know how the internet works. Meta stepping in to silence her triggered the ultimate Streisand effect. The publisher noted that the book instantly became a global phenomenon, selling almost 200,000 copies so far.
The Hacker News comments on this were intense, and they really dug into the culture that allows this to happen. A user named Gortok had the top comment, and they brought up a specific anecdote from the audiobook that is just incredibly uncomfortable. Apparently, Sheryl Sandberg repeatedly invited the author, who was pregnant at the time, to sleep in her bed next to her on the company private jet. When the author declined, the executive team allegedly became petulant and vindictive, essentially freezing her out.
That specific detail sparked a huge debate in the thread. Some users, like one who claimed to have worked at Meta, argued that the book spins the story, saying Sandberg was likely just offering a pregnant employee a place to rest, and the author turned it into a hit piece. But others pointed out that even if the initial offer was out of kindness, the inability to take no for an answer and the weird power dynamics of a billionaire executive insisting you share a bed with them is totally out of touch with normal workplace boundaries.
Exactly. Another commenter pointed out that this is a symptom of what they called the Epstein class. It is this idea that we as a society give rich and powerful people a pass on wildly inappropriate behavior just because they run successful companies. It is a stark reminder of the massive power imbalance between a multi-trillion dollar corporation and a single whistleblower.
It really is. And speaking of bad behavior and consequences, let us move on to our second story. Y Combinator just completely scrubbed a startup called Delve from their website. The link to their YC company profile just goes to a 404 file not found page.
Yeah, this one had the community buzzing. At first, a lot of people in the thread assumed Delve got kicked out because they violated an open source license. But as the comments dug deeper, a much darker picture emerged. A user named Max Bond linked to a Substack article detailing some really serious fraud allegations against the company.
Right. The accusation is that Delve was essentially providing fake compliance as a service. They were allegedly rubber stamping non-compliant customers for things like SOC 2 and HIPAA. If that is true, they were leaving their own clients exposed to massive potential criminal liability.
Which is a huge deal. A commenter named Fontaine pointed out that YC usually does not kick companies out just for having morally questionable business models. The real issue here seems to be that Delve was selling this fake compliance to other YC companies. The YC network is built on this high-trust environment where founders buy from other founders. By selling bogus security audits to their peers, Delve betrayed that trust and put the whole ecosystem at risk.
That sparked a really interesting philosophical tangent in the comments about Y Combinator's overall responsibility for the companies they fund. Some users argued YC has a lot to answer for regarding the damage their startups have caused over the years. People started listing off companies like Reddit, Airbnb, and Scribd, debating whether they've been net positive or net negative for society.
The Reddit debate was particularly fascinating. One user argued that Reddit accelerated populism and depression in the Western world through recommendation engines and ideological bubbles. But another user countered that the founders of Reddit had no idea what they were building back in 2005. It didn't even have comments for the first 6 months. It really highlights how these tiny startup decisions compound over decades into massive societal shifts.
Absolutely. Well, let us pivot from human behavior to artificial intelligence. Our third story is a new paper out of Archive titled "Embarrassingly Simple Self-Distillation Improves Code Generation." This one got almost 600 points, and it is a really cool look at how LLMs can get better without human intervention.
The core question of the paper is whether a large language model can improve its own code generation using only its own raw outputs. No human verifier, no teacher model, no complex reinforcement learning. Any answer is yes. They call it simple self-distillation, or SSD. They basically sample solutions from the model and then fine-tune the model on those exact same samples.
It sounds almost like magic, or like the model is pulling itself up by its own bootstraps. But the paper explains exactly why it works, and it comes down to something they call it a precision-exploration conflict. When an LLM is writing code, it faces two very different types of situations. Sometimes it reaches a fork, where there are several valid ways to solve a problem, and it needs to be creative and explore. Other times, it reaches a lock, where the syntax is strict, and it needs absolute precision.
Right, and usually the decoding settings for an LLM are a compromise between those two states. But this SSD method somehow reshapes the token distributions so the model becomes context-aware. It suppresses the weird, hallucinated tokens when it needs to be precise, but keeps its creative diversity when it needs to explore a new algorithmic path. They tested it on QN and Llama models, and the pass rate on coding benchmarks jumped from about 42% to 55%.
The Hacker News thread on this was great because it touched on how mysterious these models still are to us. A commenter who is actually a psychiatry resident chimed in, saying that LLM research fascinates them because it mirrors our efforts to understand the human brain. They even suggested that in some ways, we now understand LLMs better than we understand humans, thanks to new interpretability tools.
Which of course led to a classic HN debate. Another user replied saying, well, obviously we understand them better. They are orders of magnitude simpler than brains, and we built them from scratch. But then someone else pointed out that we didn't really design them in the traditional sense. We just gave a giant loop some data and parameterized math functions and updated the parameters until it did something cool. We are still discovering their emergent properties every day.
I love that perspective. It's true, we are basically digital biologists at this point, observing these models in the wild. Okay, let us lighten things up with our fourth story. We have a fantastic show HN today called NVIDIA. It's a browser-based game where you actually build a GPU from scratch.
I played around with this a bit this morning, and it is incredibly well done. The creator, JSO124, posted that they felt the educational resources for GPU architecture were lacking, so they just built a game to teach it. You start with basic logic gates and work your way up.
What is really impressive is that the creator mentioned they use Claude heavily to help build the game, especially for the wiring and simulation systems. It is a great example of AI being used as a real creative multiplier. But the best part of the thread was the live feedback loop between the community and the developer.
Oh yeah, HN users do not hold back on the technical critiques. One user pointed out that the capacitors in the game had an enable gate, which is not how physical capacitors work in reality. The creator actually responded, explaining it was a compromise they had to make for their digital simulation engine, but they appreciated the feedback.
People also had some strong feelings about the timers in the game. There was a level where you had to manually refresh DRAM every few seconds to keep the data from decaying. One user said it was so annoying it made them quit the game entirely. The creator took the feedback in stride and actually pushed an update during the discussion to adjust the difficulty levels and make the timers less punishing.
That is the magic of ShowHN. You get the smartest, most pedantic engineers in the world stress testing your project in real time. Someone also recommended another game called Turing Complete on Steam, which is a similar concept where you build a CPU and write your own assembly language for it. If you are into digital logic puzzles, definitely check both of these out.
For sure. All right, let us wrap up today with a story that is just purely entertaining. The title is, How Many Products Does Microsoft Have Named Copilot? A designer named Ty Bannerman tried to map them all out, and the result is absolutely hilarious.
It really is. He was trying to explain what Microsoft Copilot was to someone, and he realized he could not do it because the name refers to at least 75 different things right now. There are apps, features, enterprise platforms, a physical key on new keyboards, a whole category of laptops, and even a tool for building more copilots. All of them are just called Copilot.
He created this massive interactive visualization connecting them all, and he said he tried to find a pattern in the naming convention, but there just isn't one. It's pure chaos. And the Hacker News comments had an absolute field day with this.
The top comment by the Delanio really nailed it. They said, in Linux, everything is a file. In Microsoft, everything is a copilot.
That is so good. People were just riffing on it endlessly. Someone joked that we are still missing the Windows subsystem for Copilot, which led to someone else suggesting the Copilot subsystem for Copilot.
It brought up a lot of nostalgia for Microsoft's past naming disasters, too. Remember when everything was .NET? Or when everything was Azure? Or 365? One user combined them all and pitched the ultimate enterprise product name. Microsoft Azure .NET Core Copilot 365 Classic Professional Edition.
Honestly, give it 6 months and that will probably be a real product on their enterprise pricing page. It is funny because it highlights a real problem in tech marketing right now. When you name every single AI feature across a massive suite of enterprise tools the exact same thing, it completely dilutes the brand and confuses the users. But for us on the outside, it is pretty fun to watch.
It definitely is. Well, that is all we have time for today. From corporate whistleblowers and YC drama to self-improving AI and the endless sea of Microsoft copilots, it was a busy day on Hacker News.
Thank you all so much for tuning in to HN Pod. If you enjoyed the show, tell a friend about us. We will be back tomorrow with more of the top stories from the tech world. Until then, I'm Sarah.
And I am Mike. Have a great day, everyone, and happy coding.